I'm not saying it's good. I'm saying it's fun as for everybody.
To Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined tonight by Red Powell.
Hello.
And Adam Camilleri.
Hello.
We are the Bella Lost Souls Podcast. Thanks for joining us. Apologize for being off last week, but we are back with a vengeance.
Double vengeance.
Yeah.
This is like Die Hard 3.
In this episode, we're going to talk about Necrons. We're going to key up our Orktober coverage.
Well, no one else is doing it, so we got to fly that flag.
Yeah, and every episode, we're going to talk a little bit about orcs. And this episode, I just want to be sad for 1 second that I'm not going to talk about Blood Angels.
You promise?
I can't promise that, but before we get started, I just want to tell people, if you're going to make intercessors, assault intercessors, make them Death Company. I don't think you're going to go wrong there. And the Sanguinar is amazing. So if you don't already have one, you're going to get one before everyone else.
And Corbulo.
Yeah.
Dust him off. Get him out of your like fifth edition box that's under the table in like the back corner and just blow the dust off that bad boy. He's going to see some play.
Yep. Whew. Yep. Sanguinary Guard's still good. Probably maybe even a little bit better than they were before. Don't lose heart about the stratagems being torn asunder. Our time will come again. And
that's fine. You guys, isn't it like, what, you got 2 months maximum before you get your supplement? You're fine.
I hope so.
It's imminent. It's in the wings.
But Necrons, man. Okay. Can we just jump right to the Nightbringer?
Yes.
Why wouldn't we?
All right. So the Nightbringer... Okay, 18 power level elite, and I'm only bringing it up because I think it's like interesting. Is this the highest power level for an elite slot that's ever been?
For a single model, I think you're right. I mean, what's a Levy Dread? So Levy Dread is a heavy support. I think it's a Derrideo. That's the elites. And that's probably the next single model I can think of that's around like the 250-point mark.
Maybe a Telamon?
Telamon's heavy as well. Telamon's heavy as well, yeah. So I can't think of another elite slot at all that would even come close. Well, he's also 350 points, isn't he?
He sure is.
But right. Worth every penny, man.
Yeah, I was about to say 350 points of worth it every time.
Okay, so
all character Satans are 350 points.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, the Void Dragon, the Deceiver, and the Nightbringer are all 350 points, right? And that's a Transcendent Satan is 270 points, and we're going to go down exactly why they're worth that. I'll tell you with the Nightbringer. Just because it's easier to access because they are not right on top of each other. But so powers of the Satan, right? So its Satan powers are slightly changed from what they were. But in this case, they have given each named Satan a specific power. And it's very important to understand these things because they are not psychic powers, right? They sound a lot like psychic powers, but they're not. They happen at the same... The same time that they used to, which is at the end of the movement phase, which is what like kind of throws people off because it's like, okay, I'm done moving. Before I move into the psychic phase, because we're Necrons, we don't use psychic powers, we're now going to do our Satan powers. The cool thing, the hot thing, in my opinion, about the Nightbringer's power, and I'd argue also, I'm going to go through four powers here, right? Because the Nightbringer, you choose two, and then he has to take his specific power, and then you choose one. And so... the Nightbringer has his power, which is called Gaze of Death. They essentially took, he used to have a shooting attack, which was his Gaze of Death, and they've now rolled that up into a Satan power, which I have no problem with. Select one enemy unit within 9 inches of and visible to this Satan shard. Roll 3d6s. For each 4+, that unit suffers d3 mortal wounds. Oof. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, right? And so he chooses, and it's not an attack. You don't get Lookout Sir from this. So it's just select. And as long as it's visible, there's no protection from Lookout Sir because that protects you from attacks. And so you can just pick a character. Right. And so in one of these games that I play tested, he got in there. There's a character there. It was a Judiciar, right? Because I didn't want the Judiciar to make anybody fight last. And so I just picked that Judiciar, and then you roll 3 dice against it. And you do that many mortal wounds. And, you know, so 3 dice on 4 ups, you're looking at
1.5, maybe 2 on a good day.
Right. And out of those, we'll say two, I mean, you're looking at an average of four-ish. You know, we're not getting into standard deviation in here, which is the right answer. But in this case, just rough math, I mean, four mortal wounds is enough to kill most characters, or at least bring them down, weaken them. And so then on top of that, so the other one I want to cover, not relevant to the Nightbringer specifically, but the Deceiver's power is select one enemy unit within 12 inches and visible to the Deceiver. Roll 1d6, add the Deceiver's leadership, which is 10. Like, don't kid yourself. Every Necron model has 10 leadership. Your opponent then rolls 1d6 and adds the leadership characteristic of the selected unit. That enemy unit suffers one mortal wound for each point by which your total exceeds your opponent's.
Well, even most Space Marine characters are nines.
Right, exactly. And so you've already got a one-up lead on them, right? And so if you pick something that's, I mean, take, you know, some Tyranids or other units that are like sevens or eights, I mean, you've got a pretty healthy lead and you're just taking the difference and dealing those mortal wounds off, right? So I thought that was, and there's other, you know, there are some things that reduce leadership, the psychomancers and different units that have impacts that you could possibly play into it. I'm not saying it's like a really clutch, you know, something you build your entire army around, but there's some other things you can do. So let me,
and these, you don't take a test for these just go off.
Oh yeah. No,
I mean, you roll like, the effect, but you don't have to like, I try to cast my power and then.
Correct. They just have every single one of them has a different, you know, just like the Deceivers. So it's not that, you know, the Deceiver, you just do the leadership test. The Nightbringer, you got to roll those four ups to get those mortal wounds through. But like, you're right. There's no warp charge. There's no two dice. There's no ability. You can't stop these things. You can't deny them. Mm-hmm. They're coming, right? The only thing that's going to fail them is the dice rolls themselves. There's nobody else that can roll against it. And so that's where we go into... So Cosmic Fire has always been one of my favorites. Roll 1d6 for each enemy unit within 9 inches of the Satan Shard. On a 4-up, that unit suffers d3 mortal wounds. If it's a vault, it automatically suffers 3 mortal wounds instead of d3, which is cool and all. But the like we talked about Lord of War, we're really talking about Satan Shards, not Tesseract Vaults here. So throwing the Nightbringer into a mix of enemies and then him just bursting off and hitting every unit within 9 inches and on a 4-up, they suffer D3 mortal wounds. I mean, that I love that. I absolutely love it. They've got one that's very similar to Smite, and I'm sorry, I'm going to do 5. I'm sorry. I don't mean to get hung up on this. It's just a big deal. It's such a big deal because if you were wondering where Necron mortal wounds, man. So Antimatter Meteor, it's pretty much like their Smite. You roll a D6. Adding one to the roll if it's a vault. So, you know, we'll just go with the regular here. Roll a D6. On a 3 through 5, the closest enemy unit within 24 inches and visible suffers 3 mortal wounds.
Sick.
On a 6, that enemy unit suffers D3 plus 3 mortal wounds.
Double sick.
Yes, right?
And there's a stratagem, like the Satan can use one power, but there's a stratagem that you use two, the second one, the other one.
That's
they have.
Right. Yeah. That's right. Mm. Yeah. And so then there's Time's Arrow. And this is the last one I'll talk about. They're all good. There's crazy. I mean,
I think you've just about covered them all.
Yeah, no, I know. There's actually what's crazy is that there's the Void Dragons and then there's four more after or three more after this. So there's actually four others, but I won't bother. Anyways, Time's Arrow is one of my favorites in regards of. So select an enemy unit within 18 inches and visible. Roll a D6. If the total equals or exceeds the wounds characteristic of any model in that enemy unit, your opponent selects one of those models to be destroyed. And so essentially take a warlock, right? Has 3 wounds. Take a most Imperial Guard characters that have 4 wounds, right? Mm. You just got to roll and exceed equals. If the total equals or exceeds the wounds characteristic, your opponent selects that model to be destroyed. It's done.
It's pretty good, man. Especially with thinking about a lot more of these elite armies that are going to be maybe popping up in the woodwork with what are the changes to Marines and whatnot. You could get yourself in range of like 3 or 4 units and pick up a single model from each of those units.
Do you think that is remaining wounds or just their wounds
no,
is
no.
printed?
So, the wounds characteristic.
Yeah, the wounds characteristic. So it's not based off of their remaining. It's just going to be straight the model, like what, you know, if they've got 5 wounds, it doesn't matter if you've chipped 1 or 2 off, you've still got to roll a 5 or higher. But I mean, I've looked at lists already that I've been able to fit in the Deceiver who still has, I mean, just as an honorable mention, he has his Grand Illusion ability, which essentially allows you at the beginning of the game, after the first turn has been determined, like who's going first, he picks up himself and a set number of units and moves them anywhere in the deployment zone, which is a change from the old one. The old one, it was 9 inches away, but they couldn't charge. They've removed the charging thing and they've forced it to be within your deployment zone. The trick, here's the big trick, is that you can also choose, instead of redeploying them in your deployment zone, you can put them into strategic reserve, which, I mean, you're talking about a free after the fact. Like, so I know that you're going to go first. I know you're going to kill this, this, and this. So I'm just going to put them in strategic reserve now using the Deceiver's ability.
What I like about both the Nightbringer and the Deceiver and is that they have powers and abilities that mimic things that you would spend stratagems for. So in the Nightbringer specifically, his ability to ignore invulnerable saves with his entropic blow as if you were spending 2 CPs a combat phase on him. So I mean,
that's right.
And taking him as it equates to, I mean, probably more in the grand scheme of things, but at least 10 free CP.
Yeah. So when you sit there and you sit back and you go, why do these guys cost 350 points, right? 350 points. Well, I mean, with my honorable mentions out of the way, moving into the actual profile of this guy, I mean, 9 wounds, the Nightbringer is strength 7, attack. He's got 6 attacks compared to 5 attacks of the other Satan. Hitting on 2s, he moves 8, he flies. Big key thing being here, just up front, he has the Necrodermis, which was previewed by the Warhammer community, a 4-up invuln save, which is what they had before. However, in this case, he's got a new cannot lose more than 3 wounds in the same phase, which is, I mean, you're talking about extensive amounts of durability.
And being unfortunate, a character, so like where Gaz suffers, and this is not the only October reference we're going to make, but Gaz can be picked out. Like he can be.
Well, so here's the trick. I think all's fair in love and war, the enslaved star god rule on all of the Satan actually ignores lookout, sir. So even though they have 9 wounds and their characters, they don't benefit from lookout, sir. And so they can be targeted. And that's and just.
I can appreciate the fluff machinations behind that. Like, the Necrons don't want to protect these guys. They're like, we hate these dudes.
Yeah,
please shoot them for us.
Diabolical Pokemon, man. Yeah, diabolical Pokemon. That's what they are. Absolutely, it's crazy. Yeah. But so, so you mentioned his drain life rule. Each time this model makes you mentioned the lack of invuln saves. Here's the big one. And we were, before the show, we were talking about some of the glories of Dark Angels. Each time this model makes a melee attack that is allocated to an enemy model, that enemy model cannot use any rules to ignore the wounds it loses.
Huge.
It's huge, right? And so there's Reaping Sweep. He's got two close combat attacks. He can either do, it's very similar to other people with huge scythes. He can either do a sweeping attack, which essentially it just doubles the amount of attacks he has, goes up to 12 attacks. And it's strength user, so strength 7, AP -3, 1 damage, right? So there's no feel no pains, no ability to, no nothing that says on a 5 or 6, like ignore this wound. All those are out the window. This, the entropic blow that you mentioned, Paul, with it's x2 strength, so that's 14 strength, which means he's going to, not only double out vehicles, but he'll be wounding on 3s with most things. AP -4, D6 damage. Each time an attack is made, there's no invuln saves. And I tell you what, having played that recently, this guy was able to carve through some guys with storm shields with obviously little to no effort. It was great. It was fantastic. Now,
with the
like
smaller
you said,
unit size of things, being 3 models, 5 models or whatever, most of the time, his base profile attacks are going to get it done. He's going to have that extra punch with the ignore.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. And so with that, I mean, there is a stratagem that allows Satan to ignore invuln saves, but he's got it built in with those attacks. And so like with the Deceiver, you might use the entropic stratagem to ignore invuln saves. But in the case of the Nightbringer, I mean, he is a melee package. It all comes built in. It is all inclusive. And I think he's going to take a lot of, he's going to be something that people need to be really concerned about when they see a Necron army on the field.
There's also a relic that allows you to basically take a bit of the Nightbringer as a scythe. you know, something.
Oh yeah, the Void Reaper.
Yeah, and so if you have a problem with your opponents taking storm shields or whatever, the Necrons can solve it.
Oh man, it solves a lot of problems. It's awesome.
Is he one of the most complete and well-rounded killing machines we've ever seen? Like, there is nothing else in the game that has the swathe of offensive melee attacks that he does. I mean, even Gilliman doesn't really compare. Admittedly, Gilliman has like mortal wounds to come up to almost a level, but he has to roll sixes to get the mortals.
Yeah.
Nightbringer just kills everything, doesn't matter what he rolls. He's like, oh yeah, cool, I'm hitting you on twos, and I probably wound you on twos, and that's it, man. Too bad, so sad. How many wounds did you have?
And I think the balance there really being that they're D6, right? It's there is some variance to it, but and I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm saying, like, I'm arguing for the case of the betterment of the game, really, is that it's not like he just rolls in there like a knight or something dealing 6 damage flat or, you know, 3 plus D3. It's D6. I mean, it has the propensity, you know, you go into a unit of Blade Guard veterans or something like that. If you roll a 1 or a 2, that means your next dice, for the most part, is probably just going to be completely burnt, just killing that next, you know, killing that model completely.
I think he kills Magnus and Mortarion.
On good rolls with those D6s, I think he can absolutely do it. I don't see them. The crazy thing is that he could stay in there with them. They're only going to do 3 wounds to him in a given phase, right? And he heals. He's got living metal, so he's going to heal by 1 every command phase. And so he could really present a problem for people if they cannot figure out a way to really take him out.
So what's the max amount of attacks you can get? How many attacks do you get with this sweep?
So the sweep, he can get up to 12. Or he's either got 6 smash attacks or, I mean, 6 is still a lot. Or 12 sweep attacks.
12's the perfect number to make sure you can't bog him down. Like, you can't put a 20-man unit of cultists into him. He'll get through in your turn, his turn, he'll be free again in his next turn. So you can't really tarpit him effectively, which I think is the key with those models, because you get some of them. Like, even a knight now is relatively tarpitable, because the amount of attacks he's only got the same 12 attacks as this guy with the stompy feet, and his attacks are nowhere near as good as this guy's sweep attacks.
Yeah, well, and that's, I mean, you know, you want to talk about a tar pit. Well, we'll get into some of the other units and things later. But yeah, no, you're right. Like, I think, especially with his Satan powers and everything, I think, and the fact that he flies, and so he'll be able to get over units and everything, I think he's got a lot going for him.
Yeah, I say that despite knights being able to fall back and shoot and do what they like and move over models and stuff.
Yeah.
I like these two juggernauts, though, being powerhouses. I mean, they've maybe it's the nostalgia, you know, but I remember when they ruled the roost and when they went to become shards.
It was 5th edition, wasn't it? It was 5th edition the last time these guys actually like held some sway. The Deceiver had some jank at the start of 8th edition because it did something that no one else could do, being able to redeploy and stuff. But apart from it, like, you just put one of those on the table and people just scratching their head being like, wow, that's an issue, you know?
Yeah, so the Deceiver has been a great go-to for strategic play for the Necrons throughout 8th edition, right? I mean, his ability to pick up and move units was just fantastic. And back 2 years ago, when the triple vault list was anything worth talking about, the Deceiver's ability to pick up 3 Tesseract vaults and move them across the field, and then all of a sudden they were bursting, you know, Satan powers everywhere. That was something else. But you're right. Like, the Nightbringer, it has been a hot minute before people have looked at the Nightbringer and been like, you know, am I really going to, the guy looks awesome, but am I going to bring him? Like, now I won't say he's an auto include, but he's pretty awesome.
He's pretty close to an auto include.
anybody got any kind of frame of reference for how big the Void Dragon is? Because he looks huge. And the Deceiver and the Nightbringer, admittedly, are really small by today's day and age.
So, and they're on maybe 40-millimeter bases.
Mm-hmm. Like, I've recently crazy. It's 40 mil. Yeah,
it's crazy. I'll actually get some pictures of mine, Paul, and push them your way. But I admit, I don't use them right now, but my Deceiver is on a Demon Prince base because I went for an aesthetic look. He's like coming out of the ground. But anyways, my Nightbringer is definitely still on a 40-millimeter base. The Void Dragon has to be on something massive. I mean, he looks huge.
I believe there's a perspective picture somewhere on the community site, and there is one in the Codex too. And he's, I mean, it's like his torso is about as tall as a wraith. But then his wings extend past that, and his weapon is way on out there and poking a Gene Sealer Colt Magus in the head.
Yeah, I'm going to go on a limb and say he's a little bit smaller than a Bloodthirster.
That's probably a good, yeah.
Yeah, or like the Lord of Change, maybe a little bit smaller. That's just off of my pure gut and the few pictures I've seen. But that, does that mean like the Deceiver and Nightbringer need new models? Probably does. Are they going to get them? I hope they do. In the meantime, if you want to convert one up, absolutely you can. Like, I think a cool conversion, and it's probably way too big, but you could do like a Mortarian conversion. He's got the scythe. He's got some cool wings you can use. Wrap him in bandages. Wrap him up in like a mummy. He's already posed well for it. It'd be a lot of work though.
But just even looking at it though, I think the Void Dragon would make a sweet Nightbringer, or I think the Void Dragon would actually make a sweet Satan shard at all, no matter what you're using. Like, it's
a beautiful model, and you're right. Like, there's so many ways to convert that up. I 100% approve any attempts to convert the Void Dragon into any of the other shards. I think it's going to be amazing. I can't wait to see people's like paint jobs on that model, because it's just so aesthetically Necron pleasing that it's going to be out of control. But I tell you what, there's Creature Caster came out with like a Grim Reaper looking model that is pretty awesome as far as like the you know what you could possibly consider as a Nightbringer. It's pretty fantastic. I highly recommend checking that out too.
The Transcendent Satan is that model that comes inside the Tesseract Vault, so you can't really get it without also getting a Tesseract Vault. But
which I mean, you know, oh well. Things are awesome. They not only do they look cool, but they also come with a bunch of like little mini scarabs, which is the only place I've been able to find them. And for terrain and bases and stuff, it's pretty amazing. So I love those little things. But yeah, I've got a lot of those Transcendent Satans, and it's those guys. So like I said, 270 points. They still do the same thing they did in the 8th edition Codex, where you choose their like cosmic Satan personalities essentially through traits. I prefer they've got one which is called Cosmic Tyrant. So you either choose one or you roll two randomly. And I'd say five of the six are really good. And then the sixth one is okay. It just allows them to deep strike. So it's hard to complain. But the one I would probably go for every time is Cosmic Tyrant, which allows them to have two powers, and it allows you to use two powers, which most of them don't have outside of the stratagem.
Do you think it's worth it to roll? That was what I was trying to debate with myself earlier. Is like, should I just roll every time, or is it that reliability of picking the exact one I want?
Yeah, I personally like Cosmic Tyrant so much, and I think that the Mortal Wounds is kind of, especially if you're going with a Transcendent Satan, you might as well play into the Mortal Wound capability and roll out with Cosmic Tyrant. The other things are great. I mean, there's still really good benefits to it, but I do think that that's probably a good direction to go if you feel comfortable with your Satan powers.
With a mandate to pick your powers at Army Generation, it was nice to see that there was a stratagem in here that allows you to still change if you want to.
Yeah.
I think that's the way that people will compensate going forward.
And look, like, agreed. Chaos has had that Chaos Familial stratagem since the CSM book came out. So I think it's only fair that some people, I mean, admittedly, that is something that used to make Chaos unique. And I'm all for Chaos having unique stuff. But I feel like now that we're all locked into things, I'm happy for that to be more freely given out. Maybe not for everything, maybe not for litanies or all corns of other stuff, but I don't mind it for psychic powers.
They actually, the Necrons used to have this. This is not new to them.
Oh, no, I'm just glad that it still exists. You know, what I'm saying is that I kind of treated that in some, you know, the tournaments that allowed it or whatever as like a mini sideboard. It's like, I could change my relic if necessary. I could pick a different psychic power if necessary. Now, most of the time I didn't. I mean, most of the time I do build a list that is, you know, anchored or at least supplemented by whatever powers, everything synergizes, you know, well, but I liked the functionality of being able to change that. And, they could have been a core concept that didn't make its way back into these new codexes, which, by the way, the look of them are very sleek. We haven't talked about like the design of the book yet, because we just kind of jumped into talking about the juicy bits of how freaking amazing the Nightbringer is. But the books are sleek. They feel more modern. They feel like it's a new edition and not just a reskin of an old book.
That's good.
Yeah. I'm just going to say, you guys, hopefully you agree with me, but the format of the 8th edition codexes was not great. There was so much flicking back and forward. This data sheet has this options. How much did that points cost? What was the strategy to go with that? Back to the front of it to see what the special rules, if they're relevant. Then to the things, if you take it as all Dark Angels or Blood Angels or whatever, you get this. And then it was back to the front. And I felt like it was very convoluted and very clunky. And I realized the points were set out that way because that's how they want a chapter approved to roll out all the points. And so they would just extrapolate that and chuck it into the book. But it didn't always make it very conducive to write a list. And I'm a bit old school with some of my lists. If I'm writing a hardcore tournament list, sometimes I will sit down with my book at the end of a day, and I'll spend an hour writing it down on a piece of paper. Because if it looks stupid on paper, I generally don't like it, you know? If it doesn't make sense when I write it out, for some reason, there's a thing in my head where, like, it needs to make sense when I'm writing it down. And that's just a quirk of how my brain functions. But some of the middle Psychic Awakening books got even worse. Like, I did a little look into the Scion Psychic Awakening recently, and that thing is one of the worstly formatted anythings I've seen from GW in a long time. But the later ones, the things like Engine War, War of the Spider, were formatted fantastically. I'm hoping that's reflected in these new codexes.
Red, don't hate me, but we actually forgot the World Eaters existed in a book because of the format.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's you made it really hard for me, Paul.
I'm sorry.
I think I can overcome it.
But the books are sleek, and it feels... Again, it looks better. It looks more modern, and it also feels like you are looking at something new, you know, with fresh. And I like the way it's all laid out and formatted and stuff.
Good, yeah. And I'm excited to see what's kind of, especially with the return of the Silent King and everything. I'm with this codex. I'm really excited to see the updates to the lore for the Necrons as well.
So speaking about awesome looking models, the Hexmark Destroyer. Has that made it into any of your lists yet? Because I love that model, by the way. I think the rules are pretty good, but you know, it's brand new. How does it fit in?
So I think it is a great. I know this doesn't sound good when I say it, but when I call it a filler unit, I don't mean to say that it's just, you know, secondhand consideration. It's 75 points, right? And so at 75 points, you consider something that has 6 shots, 18 inches, strength 6. AP minus one damage. Like the unfortunate part is that one damage, especially now that all Space Marines are 2 wounds, it can cut through? It can. It's AP minus one. And there's ways to like reduce cover and things like that. Depending on what, you know, dynasty it is, you might be able to increase its AP, maybe if that's the direction you go. However, so it's got the ability to overwatch without any issues. And so the crazy thing being, it hits on twos and it rerolls ones because it's a destroyer. What I'm saying is that when it overwatches on twos and it rerolls ones. And so that's a really big deal. And the target does not receive the benefits of cover against this attack. So you don't even receive cover against it. So I think it can, you want to talk about something that at range can chew through, because it every time it kills something, it gets to shoot again. And so if you're shooting at like a mob of one wound models, you're going to be able to peel through that pretty quick in a lot of cases. I think it's got some play. And so here's the big thing. We haven't really gone into it, but, you know, so the new codex has this new concept of command protocols. And in command protocols, you have to have a character within 6 inches, typically, unless you get some of the other benefits of a unit for that unit to get the benefit of it. And so if there's no character nearby, then they don't, like, you're essentially missing out on a part of the built-in benefits. And so this guy can come in. I'll get to his stratagem in a second, but he can also deep strike, but he has could really just sit well behind a unit of warriors and provide that much more firepower, right? And again, 75 points, he becomes a command protocol node, and he just sits in there. And it's really good. So real quick, though, his stratagem. So it used to be, for anybody that remembers, death marks, right? So death marks used to have like that hyperspace hunter deal where they would come out of the warp, and like the same time that you deep struck in, they would come in and then you'd get shot up by them. If anybody took them with their sniper rifles. So they still have that, but it's a stratagem now. It's no longer baked into their profile. But the Hexmark Destroyer can also use that. And so he can essentially, you bring in a unit from Deep Strike, he can actually, from reserves, deploy and then shoot them up right then and there. The other thing it does is it also serves as a form of Auspex scan, where he or unit of death marks that are already on the field can essentially shoot a unit that just came in. And so it's a stratagem that literally kills two birds with one stone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's how pretty about good. That? Let's, so. Can we debate a bit between warriors and immortals? Is there even a debate?
So, to me, there's not, but red seems to like to swing both ways.
I would say that it really depends and situational. So I would say up front that I think that it leans more so towards warriors. I think warriors, not only being so that there's a point difference, right? They're 13 points, a big change from just up front. Gauze Reapers, right? So Gauze Reapers in the Indominus box were a rapid fire 1, 14-inch weapon, strength 5, AP minus 2, 1 damage, right? And so that meant to get double shots, you needed to be within 7 inches. Those have now changed to assault 2, 12 inches, strength 5, AP minus 2, 1 damage. And that assault 2 was just enough that when I play tested, I ran, so get this, I ran 80 warriors, right? All with Gauze Reapers. And the math on the reanimation protocols and the way that it works now, having played with it, it is awesome. They are durable. They hold in there. The warriors have that much more of a benefit to it because they reroll ones.
Was really was that 10 units that of...
No, that
I'm
was,
sorry,
that was
8 units of 10? Of 20. Okay, yeah. Right.
4 units of 20. So that, because I was playtesting that first, because I wanted to see what it felt like to have that many. Now I understand, like, there's a good reason for people to bring more blast weapons right now, right? But no matter what, a lot of those blast weapons, so you take like plasma and scepters, which people are running right now, those get 3 shots anyways, right? It doesn't matter whether you have 10 models or 11 models. You can only take at minimum 10 warriors. So you're going to get hit with those weapons regardless. It doesn't even change anything.
What does it maximize?
Right, exactly. And because honestly, the more models you have in a warrior, in any squad, the more models you have, the better. Like they've still kept that kind of core element from reanimation protocols, in that the more you have, the better off you are. So I mean, just real quick and without going too far into it, this list, I had 80 warriors. I brought Zaris, the new souped up Psychic Awakening cryptek. He allows you to heal 2 units, and warriors specifically, when they heal them, by heal them, it's like the apothecary, but they don't have to roll. You just bring back models. If they're core units, you can bring back 1 model. And if they're warriors, you can bring back D3 warrior models. And so that's huge, right? I think that's a really big deal because I had a squad of warriors. I had 20 of them. They got charged. They got hit. They were shot. Everything went into it. Long story short, they went down to 4 models, right? And so it's not like old reanimation protocols where you get to roll back like everything you've lost. You only get to roll for the models you lose after each attack that hits you. And so what's crazy is that we're talking Outriders, we're talking Assault Intercessors, we're talking Blade Guard. I mean, they all just chewed through these guys, right? Just took them out of the game. I was losing warriors and I was getting a couple back here or there from reanimation protocols. It goes down to 4 models. A Resurrection Orb allows you to essentially roll for all the models you've lost. And so Resurrection Orbs still feel expensive, but I really feel like they have a place in the game right now for Necrons, cool because they really weren't.
How many points is a Res Orb? It's still
30 points.
30 points? You get 3 warriors back, it's paid for itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
You get 4 warriors back, gravy, you know?
Well, and that was the thing. I rolled it, and so you can actually get a relic version, which is even better. It gives a +1 to the roll. But either way, I just had the normal one. I was down to 4 warriors out of a 20-man unit, and I got 7 back, and then Zaris brought 2 more back. And so I went from 4 models to the end of my movement phase suddenly having 13 models, and then amazing. I just switched them out with another 20-man unit. It was awesome. And so the warriors were definitely durable. Now, just to give the immortals some love, is that if you're trying to go like into an elite space marine an elite format for the Necrons, a unit of warriors is going to be 130 points. And if you're going to keep them at 10, man, I mean, that's fine. It's not a big deal. Immortals are still at their relative price. I'll just make sure before I get anything wrong here. But so the immortals are 17 points. They're +2 points if you get Tesla. So just stay with the gauze weapons. 5 of them are great for sitting back in an objective and filling a troop slot really quick and fast if that's what you need. Because it's 17 points. I mean, you're talking 85 points versus 130 points for a minimum unit of warriors. And at that point, Immortals are T5 with a 3-up save, you know, in cover, putting them at 2-up. It's just that much more durable, whereas Warriors are 4-up armor save, T4. You know, if you bring Zeris, you can modify them, make them a little bit better, but randomly, right? But so that is just some things to consider. I think that Immortals have a place if you're using them appropriately and you're trying to struggle to like get troop choices in, because there are so many options in this book that you can take advantage of a lot of different things. I mean, you could arguably make nearly an entire army of different destroyer types of units, right? It would be, man. Especially once these Ophidian destroyers drop, like it's going to be awesome.
The new old boys.
Yeah, that's right. The new old boys. So there's just a lot of stuff to it, man. I think that the Warriors, so I'm playing around, like I ran 80 Warriors. I'm looking at different lists right now with 60 Warriors. And I think that those blocks of Warriors have a lot of play, really.
60 feels right.
Well, and the cool thing is that, you know, so it used to be with My Will Be Done that you like, you had to pick one unit. Now you still pick one unit to get the +1 to their hits. But now the Overlords put out the aura that gives everybody, all the core units, it gives them +1 to their movement. And so the Necrons really aren't as slow as you might think, right? They definitely aren't, in fact. And so in 8th edition, I used to play Nephrek, which was my favorite. That was the auto advance 6 inches. And now in 9th edition, the 9th edition Codex, first of all, it gives me a 6-up Invuln built in, which is awesome, right? Because you're not just... And it's just a straight up 6-up Invuln. No other terms and conditions therein. The next part is they still get the full auto advance. And then they can, you know, when they do that, they can move through other models, like almost as if they had fly, essentially. And then now the other thing they added is that they've got the ability to fall back through other models, which is really big. Wow. Because
that's nice.
It is, right? And those just, I mean, because even I, so this was the first time in this playtesting game that I'd really ever had to do it. Desperate Breakout stratagem, newer to 9th edition, allowing you to essentially escape tri-pointing, right? Mm. What I had not been familiar enough with it, is you have to roll for every model in that unit.
Yeah.
And that hurts, right? That can hurt a lot, especially when you're running, you know, like a unit of 13 plus warriors or whatever. And so the ability to fall back and move over models is clutch. I think that's really big for Nephrek. So the one I did play test was the Nihilok. It's so everything's OBSEC's objective secured. If you are objective secured, you count for 2 models instead of 1 model, which makes those blobs of warriors just like
incredible.
Yeah, you've got to push them off, right? And then as long as you're in your deployment zone, all AP minus 1 weapons count as 0, which is big. And so I'm in my deployment zone, I'm sitting on an objective, and your chain swords are 0. Like you're not.
Is that, so I haven't read the terms and conditions on that one. Is that every model in the unit or just a model in the unit, or the model, the unit is within your deployment zone? Because those 20 mans have got a huge footprint, even if you do have to double up within the coherency issue, double the coherency stuff.
Correct. They do. They definitely have a huge footprint. I'm looking at so it says if this model's unit is wholly within its controller's deployment zone.
Thank God.
So, yeah, right. You don't want them stretching out and just getting out. No, so that was pretty, I mean, it definitely contributed to their ability to stay in the fight. The key other part to that is that, so, you know, the Codexes have these new built-in secondaries, which I thought were pretty cool. The Necrons have one called Purge the Vermin, which is a reverse engage on all fronts.
That's pull, by the way.
That's with the vermin.
Yeah.
You get 2 points in that secondary for every table quarter that does not have an enemy unit wholly within it.
I think that's tough though.
I mean, I think again, you go back to the footprint, and if all you've got to do is focus out your opponent's units from your table quarters for, you know, a couple turns, I mean, I think you can get there pretty quick. I think you can at least get to 12, right?
So what that is, that's a snowball. That's a snowball one. You take that when you know you're going to have board dominance. Let's say you're playing Grey Knights or Custodes versus what you're talking about, like 80 Necron Warriors. You know you're going to win the primary, and you know you're going to outnumber them on the objective. So all you got to do is also deny them getting theirs, and you're causing this double down effect where you're getting engaged, they're not getting engaged. You're getting. I suppose you'd have to. Surely you can't take this one and engage on all fronts, though. Yeah.
Yeah, it's within the same category.
thank God. Another thank God moment. But yeah, it's a snowball effect. When you already know you're going to win the primary, you take this one and you're just going to double down on not only winning the primary, but denying them what they wanted to do, which I like. I like that stuff. I like that clever thinking. And you'll know the games you want to take it.
Yeah. And so that's exactly like you're going to, it's got a place. It's not a just completely throwaway kind of deal. Again, like all this stuff is just awesome. I think it really balances. They did such a great job with combining some of these things, and there really are options. Like, by all means, I'm sitting here talking about these. Don't let, you know, I don't mean to say that this is the staple and the only way to play Necrons. I think that there's melee options. I think that, so that we haven't even talked about command protocols and all, but that's, I think that might be a discussion for another time. Just because it is an interestingly new concept. It's, you know, so you have to set up all five of them before the game and whatnot. And you've really got to plan out, like, I think I'm going to be doing this in this turn versus this in this turn. And if you want to go custom traits, I mean, there's a couple out of the custom traits that I really want to highlight right now, more so than, I guess, the command protocols. Because if you go custom traits, you have to, your entire army has to be the same. It's like super doctrines for Space Marines. Mm-hmm. Your entire army has to be the same type, like same faction, essentially, in order to get the benefits of command protocols. And so if you mix up like with different custom trait detachments or whatnot, you essentially lose this. But out of the custom traits, so it's kind of weird. It's not like Space Marines where you just pick two. In this case, you have to pick one from one column and one from another column. And so one of them is the OBSEC deal, right? Much like Nihilok, it allows all models become OBSEC, which could be
I'm cool. A huge fan of that one. That is, for, to my mind, that's the most powerful like secondary building mechanic we've seen. Like the all the build your own, maybe Master Artisans is up there actually, but that now that Master Artisans is going to nerf the nerf bat, I think that is the next best build it's your own there, anything. Right? Yeah, it's so powerful, and in so the right hands. It's just the winner.
I agree. With ninth edition and the focus on objectives, it's a big deal. Mm. It's a really big deal. This other one, though, Rad Wreath. So units with this code have the following ability, Rad Wreath. It's an aura. While an enemy unit, excluding vehicle units, is within 1 inch of this unit, subtract one from the toughness characteristic of models in that enemy unit.
Those old school grenades, man.
That's where the admin got it from, eh? That's another one they stole from the Krons.
Yeah. Well, so you go into melee Necron.
Originally
right?
With the Grey Knights, I believe.
Oh, was it? that's huge, right? Because like you think of most of the destroyers and their strength 6 going into combat, and when they turn all Space Marines to toughness 3, you're now wounding on 2s. It's a really big deal. It's a really big deal.
Well, even making getting warriors to wound them on 3s is a big deal.
Yes, absolutely. And so the next part is that there's a command protocol.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say ahead, there's a stratagem that allows you to increase the strength.
Yes.
Is that still in the new book?
Yes. So, fantastic. I mean, by one, right? But if you've lowered their toughness by one and you're punching a little bit harder, then you're basically killing knights with warriors and melee. So, I mean,
yeah.
So get this, right? So you've got Rad Wreath, which is minus one to their toughness. There's that plus one strength for the stratagem. There's a plus one strength there's the stratagem. If Zaris is there and he gives him that plus one buff, that's very circumstantial though, right? That's a 1 in 3 chance to do that. But then on top of that, there's a command protocol that you can essentially give the units all in that turn, and that one turn will get plus one to their strength. And so you've essentially added at least 2 strength in that instance, maybe 3 strength if you use Zaris to build that in. And so you put warriors at strength 7 in a lot of cases, right? Like that's, or you're talking about destroyers that are now at strength 9. Right. Mm. I mean, it's or strength eight. I'm sorry. So strength 8. And then you're bringing Gravis armor down to toughness 4 at that point. And so it just really can get through that. So that's just the left side of the dynasties, the custom dynasties. The one I really want to highlight on the right side is relentlessly expansionist. At the start of the first battle round, before the first turn begins, so noting that's after you know who's going to go first, units with this code can make a normal move of up to 6 inches.
Hugely powerful. So your whole turn, your whole army gets a scout move. And yeah. if it doesn't...
Your whole army gets into rapid fire range. That's
Yeah, or your whole army gets out of range, out of their rapid fire range if you go second.
That's I would right. never thought of amazingly that ever. Powerful. I'm always going forward.
Blood angels.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's immensely good. I think people are talking that one and the obsec just go so well hand in hand, because first turn, you go first, you move up 6 inches, and you got literally pretty much as many wounds as you want. And you can make those wounds as, hard to kill as you like. And just dump them on the objectives turn one and just see if they can dig you out.
Get a huge and just being advantage. Able to play that. Yeah, and then play your durability. Yeah. Then you're...
Yeah.
Yep.
And the thing, Necrons legitimately have a durability card to play again. They didn't before.
Yes, I agree. And so the trick with reanimation protocols, if you're fighting against it, has not gone away. It's still about killing the entire unit, but Necrons just have so much more durability right now, especially with how reanimation protocols is built into it. It's pretty fantastic.
So the what you were talking about before, what is it? Essentially it's their mono bonus, yeah? If you take all Necrons of a certain
yes, the command protocols.
Yeah, and so that's what they've... I think it sounds like a pretty elegant way of getting something akin to doctrines in, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, so it's like what I would compare almost to ad mech canticles to a certain extent, or like you said, the doctrines. Because it changes every turn. I think that there's some serious play. The Silent King has the ability to duplicate it. And then there's also a relic specific to his dynasty, to the Silent King's dynasty, that you could give to an unnamed character that you could do it again. And so you could repeat a lot of those. It's essentially like in a Space Marine player, if he could essentially say, well, I want to stay in Devastator Doctrine for the first three turns, right? The Necrons can effectively do that with the command protocols if you bring the Silent King and this relic. Now, in other cases, and I thought it was cool because there's 6 protocols, right? There's obviously only 5 to a turn. Or to a game. And so you're always going to leave one out, right? And so the way I'd break them down, and what's interesting for those that end up looking at the codex, is that they're kind of after the fact of a lot of the other stuff. Like you go through the Crusade stuff and everything, they're right before all the data sheets begin. And so this deal, you've got to lay this stuff out before the battle begins. And there's 6, like I said. So, and then here's where custom traits don't benefit. Custom traits don't have a built-in preference for these command protocols. The old dynasties, Nefrek, Sautek, Mefret, so on and so forth, they all get a bonus for a specific one of these protocols, where essentially, because the thing being is that each protocol has 2 benefits. When that turn occurs, you only get to choose one of the 2 benefits when that protocol comes up. And so the thing being is that, like, so for example, Nefrek or Nihilok or whatever, they get in a specific, like, for them protocol, they get both benefits instead of just one. And so if you think it's worthwhile, they get that much more of a bonus.
Oh, nice.
No, I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's great. I think it's a good mechanic.
Well, let's take a break. I mean, that was a very deep dive into Necrons, and I appreciate that insight, Red.
Anytime.
Yeah, we're unearthing the tomb worlds ourselves. I mean, look, I'll be honest, the Necrons, I mean, I like that they exist, and of course I love the Terminator aspect and some of the War of the Worlds type stuff that has been incorporated into this stuff. Over, like, even some of their stratagems are stratagems or warlord traits or whatever, they're a little bit on the campy, like, Space Invader side, just in some of the names.
Oh, yeah.
And it seemed, I don't know, it just never really enticed me before, but now with all the additional units and the complexity of the tapestry of what the army can look like now, I don't know, man. It's the first time I've really been excited about maybe potentially even playing Necrons.
I always felt like their range just never felt fully fleshed out. Like, they never felt like they had enough units in their book and that's why you had some metas of the game where they just didn't function properly. They just didn't have the right amount of things to, roll with the different punches that were coming out, especially during all the different changes in 8th edition. But yeah, now hopefully with the range getting fleshed out a bit more, a lot more tools getting added to the toolbox, they just get a whole new lease on life.
Yeah, well, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about a little bit about orcs. And yeah, let's go from there.
All right.
See you all in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey, everybody, we are back. Still got Red and Adam here.
What up?
Still, yeah. Hey.
So, orcs, you know, somebody has to talk about these guys.
It's Orc freaking Toba. And, like, where are they? Where are the orcs, guys?
They didn't even make it into the facts.
No, it's just a bit of a sad state of affairs.
I mean, maybe they didn't need it. You know, I in some cases, I think they've been doing pretty well.
Okay,
I think they're vastly exceeding expectations, because they're just, everybody thought they were just going to be an absolute write-off of a faction going into this one. And I think that people just didn't value the fact that, hey, these are still guys who have bodies, have a lot of attacks, and aren't horribly pointed. I don't know.
Lots of shots, too. I mean, this. Yeah. We were discussing it in the break there. And Adam, you brought this up about how you don't want to play an army that can be wrecked by things that people are going to be taking to kill the Marines and the Necrons.
Yeah, this is why I've got a feeling that the buggy list might not be long for this world. I feel like the more people will tool for Marines, the worse the world is going to be for the buggies. And that's just mostly because you think about the things that people want to take against Marines. You want to take things that are strength 8 with multi-damage and a good rend. What is that going to absolutely smoke? It's going to smoke toughness 6 buggies, toughness 5, toughness 6 buggies. It's going to take them to whatever invuln they've got for being probably death skulls. And then they're going to get, you know, a 6 up and take X amount of damage. I think they're going to have to adapt. I think the buggy list might not be like, I still don't think the buggies are bad by any means, but I don't think they can be in and of themselves the archetype moving forward, if that makes sense.
Well, with Marines moving to 2 wounds basically across the board, is that people are going to be taking high volume of fire or high damage output weapons just to compensate for that. Because, yeah, you know, if you go out and play randomly, you're going to encounter somebody with a range, you have to take what it is. So to your point, anything that has a chance against those Marines or Necrons is going to shred what the current Orc profile is. And so is it like time for the battle wagons to come back?
Oh, dude, I was hoping you were going to say that. I think it is. I think it's time for the bike. So the bikes, the battle wagons, and the trucks. I think truck boys are fine. 3 or 4 trucks full of boys with a claw or a chopper, I think, or kill saws. Nothing wrong with that at all.
Trucks have that. I mean, they're that medium profile. They can be blocked by obscuring. They not be blocked, but they have the potential to maybe get some line of sight blocking from the height of terrains. Yep. Maybe not. But then you've got that extra durability of they still have to get rid of the truck and then your boys. And any turns, any additional turns that you can buy your boys, I think you have a higher outcome of winning games.
Yeah, and in all reality, like, you think about the things people are using to hold objectives now, and admittedly, you might have to suspend your disbelief on the Marine frontage, but you think of one unit of truck boys into 20 Necron Warriors. They're going to do some work, yeah?
Like, just with the sheer volume of attacks, you think?
Just volume plus that knob.
Yeah, somebody with a power claw, yep.
Yeah, yep. They will do some absolute work. And you double that down, make it two of those units. Add some bikes in. I'm not sure on the bikes. I've got my gut feeling the bikes might be okay as like an MSU.
Which bikes are you talking about? Are you talking about like the knob bikers? You're talking about just the regular war bikes?
Just the regular bikes, because I'm of the opinion that it's only a matter of time before they get an extra wound as well. And I think on those terms, when they get the third wound, I think they start to be quite spicy.
Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. That hasn't happened yet. I suppose that's a bit of my speculation and conjecture.
Well, I mean, fast moving unit with a big profile, and that's wider bait. They're no outrider.
They're no outrider. But admittedly, they're quite a bit cheaper than outriders.
Super thick outriders. There.
But yeah, I think Orcs are okay. And on top of that, I've been nothing but impressed with Gaz. Don't know about you guys. We were talking about a Nighthaunter. Nighthaunter. Nightbringer. The same can be said for Gaz. He is a linchpin build around behemoth of a unit. And I think he brings a lot to the table that Orcs really need at the moment. They need this polarizing, I can't ignore this unit. That's the thing that enables a unit of trucks, a bunch of truck boys to have some more play on the table. Hey, you have to put X amount of shots into Gaz this turn. Oh, it's next turn. Oh, you have to put X amount of shots into Gaz this turn.
Well, you've got to max out whatever damage you can do to him in that phase, which means that if you fire your unit of, I mean, I don't think anybody's really going to take suppressors right now, but if you fire your autocannon unit into him and you don't max out the number of wounds you can do to him, you have to fire something else.
Well, you think about what people are taking to crack vehicles at the moment. It's Eradicators.
Yep.
You think about a unit of Eradicators into Gaz. Six shots, and they're not going to have, let's say they don't have full rerolls anymore because of the changing of the times. Let's say they got reroll once. So you get five hits. You are wounding on threes. You get four wounds. And let's say you're not Salamander, so you're not reroll one of them. You get four wounds. Gaz's got a four plus invuln. You know, maybe he takes one of those wounds and you don't do the four because he's four wounds per phase. Yeah.
Yep. Four wounds per phase.
Let's say you only get one melter shot through and you don't get four wounds. You got to shoot something else. Otherwise there was no point. The pain boy heals him up and he goes about his business.
But and you, those are at that there. That's the only time you get to fire them because they are then dead.
Yes. Because if they're in range of Gaz, those guys will wire people. They'll move advance. They'll go get, at the worst case scenario, they're tied up, you know, they survive. And they get tied up. But these are the things you need to kill truck boys with, the trucks with. It's the same profiles. Admittedly, if you stack a bunch of heavy bolters, now heavy bolters are quite good because they're too damaged. But it's the same thing. It's the same deal. You want to put strain on your opponent's offensive profiles and just mess with their target priority. I feel like Gaz brings a little table. I feel like I project that biker boys might see a renaissance. Along with buggies, like one of the buggies that get to double pile in, double attack with the custom job, they're still amazing. I can't remember which one they're called. The Rucka Wucka Wang Baggin.
The Waka Waka Daka Dakas.
even if somebody told me what it was, I would just forget because it's so much more fun making up your own name. But yeah, dude, battle wagons. Battle wagons with a death roller is just the super roller one. I'm not saying it's good. I'm saying it's fun as for everybody.
I don't think it's bad.
Is the only way. Yeah, I don't know if it's. See, I don't think it's bad either. I just don't have any definitive proof that it's good yet, and that's all I'll go on.
I'm gonna continue to beat the Mega Knob drum, and they also fit comfortably in battle wagons. I mean, that's, you get to deliver a big payload of things. The battle wagon in itself has offensive capability, mm-hmm. So it's way better than a Land Raider, if you ask me. Just for functionality on the tabletop.
Yeah, I think so too.
And what you can deliver with it.
You can't just tap it and forget it exists. You tap it, it just runs you over.
which is strong.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Land Raiders shoot into combat now, but you know, you 10 cultists tap a Land Raider, Godhammer Pattern Land Raider, and there's three turns gone because you're hitting it on fours into combat and only got a few shots.
They have a twin-linked heavy bolter.
Yeah, which, you know, hits on fours in combat. It's because it's heavy.
Yeah, I'm just saying that what you're going to put in that Land Raider is not going to do near as much as what you're going to put in that battle wagon.
Well, term is, but yeah, I agree. I really like small Death Skulls units and Meganobs. Like three-man Meganob units just jumping out onto the midboard table. Maybe you've got the buggies and stuff and the battle wagons jumping into people's faces. I think there's a lot of play. I'm not sure what that exact list looks like for Orcs to really contend with Marines and stuff now, but I think they've still got it.
Everyone, I just want to point out that Dark Angels have been good for all of 5 minutes, and Adam has already mentioned Terminators and a Land Raider.
Yes. Where's Ricky? Ricky will be rolling in his grave not being on this episode. He's like, he's sitting at home having a conniption as we speak.
It's an excellent point. I mean, Dark Angels are going to be, but that's one of those things. People are going to be taking up things to load to bear for them. So how do the other armies even hang in there after everyone's strapped in to kill high value, real tough targets?
Well, here's the real question here. I'll chuck this one over to Red. Let's say conceptually you have a polarizing element of your opponent's army that can't be wounded on, you know, better than a 4+. That's permanently transhumaned. Does that mean you start dropping anti-tank weapons and start taking mass strength 4 multi-damage? So there's no point going over strength 4 against those or over strength 5 because you're always winning them on 4s. And you start stacking things like Stalker Bolters again or whatever the heavy intercessors have that's going to be multi-damage. Things that aren't going to get foiled by their ignoring of the wound rolls and stuff, but at the same time, it's still going to do work once they get through. Is that a thing you think people pivot to? Because admittedly, like a Stalker Bolter at this point is exactly the same against those as a overcharged plasma gun.
That's right. Yep. And you just, I mean, you know what I think is clutch, and I think that it's indicative in and of itself is heavy bolters, man. Strength 5, 2 damage. I mean, other than, yeah, so they're, you know, AP minus 1, but you're right. I mean, like, you know, you might see with that kind of deal, even Hellblasters, right? Because if they don't have that, Hellblasters are well equipped to just chew through other units as well. But that, yeah. I mean, you're right. Like, it does kind of wash out the applicability of these, even Eradicators, right? Like, wouldn't you rather have arguably even suppressors, right? I mean, I don't know if you saw, but suppressors went up in damage.
Yeah.
And so like, what, like, why not? You want, and they went up in shots, right? I think that was that they went up in shots. I might be wrong on damage, but they went up in shots.
I think it is damage, but down in AP or something.
Down in AP, yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that you're on it in regards that there's going to be something washed out of weapons and whatnot, but it's more about it, and this, I think this has been a mainstay in a lot of cases. It's more about volume than it is necessarily quality. The Eradicators try to defy that concept in a lot of ways, but people, you're starting to see, I mean, Necrons, man, we didn't talk about it, but in the same vein as the Dark Angels and the Deathwing concept, quantum shielding no longer does what it did in Aether or any of those editions before. Now it does the same thing where it ignores wound rolls of 1, 2, and 3, and then it gives them an invuln save, which they haven't had before. But I think you're going to start seeing more of this ignores wound rolls concept coming into play.
Well, it seems like those are the two things that have all of a sudden gone from obscurity, as in literally only Marines had it, to it being a linchpin part of Necrons, on top of being and the other one being the limiting of wounds, the amount of wounds you can do. That all of a sudden that's becoming pretty prevalent, isn't it? I mean, Bloodthirsters can take it.
Yep.
All the Catan shards have it now, and Gus has it. Like, is anybody else who has the limited amount of wounds they can take per phase?
Not yet that I can think of.
That's it for now.
Yeah, for now. I think it is a new thing that's definitely coming into play.
Well, I think people can go back and just chart the amount of times I said towards the end of 8th edition, this game is so killy, this game is so killy, the game is really killy. And it just seems like these are the two ways they've decided that they'll go about limiting just how much stuff can physically die in one turn. Especially your keynote, awesome, crazy, thematic, brilliant centerpiece units. No one liked like Magnus coming, being on the table. I mean, at the start of 8th edition, he'd be on the table and he'd be like, okay, I can kill Magnus, this knight, or Mortarion. I can't do all three, and I might not do any. And then it was just like, oh, you got Magnus and Morty, both dead turn one. Cool.
I'll be honest, I did not expect the Satan to get this rule.
Either, sure.
But I knew it would be proliferated. Like, it would be on someone else.
Yeah, when I saw it on the... I thought it was a really good choice for the Bloodthirsters to make Bloodthirsters just have a chance to use the things, because they are so cool. Seeing it on Gaz made a lot of sense as well. As soon as I saw Gaz's wounds, I was just like, oh man, they've ruined Gaz. Gaz has got 12 wounds or whatever. And I'm like, oh, but he can only take 4 a turn. That is saucy. And I still think it's saucy.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, with the orcs, Killicans. I mean,
I sure have it.
I mean, they're 45 points a model base.
Yeah,
so
they
can
take
get
a little
ton
board.
Of them yep. on the table. That's I mean, good. I know they're only 5 wounds, toughness 5 or whatever, but is there a certain quality to the quantity that you can take?
100%.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And I think, so what I just said, what me and Red were just talking about, how you take the profiles that people aren't going to kit for, or people aren't going to be taking great weapons for. And I was saying Chuck Boys, unfortunately, they cop a bit of the bad end of the stick, especially with heavy bolters and things like this. When you talk Killicans, you know, maybe they are the right profile to sneak through, because they're toughness 5 with 6 wounds?
5 wounds.
Or they're toughness 6 with 5 wounds.
They're
one or the other.
Toughness 5 with 5 wounds.
Never mind. I thought one of those was a 6.
What is it? The Mega Dread, maybe?
I know the Death Dread is toughness 7. Oh, so...
I just combined two orky words that don't even exist.
You did. I knew what you were talking about. It's great. But here's something I haven't talked about, is Honor the Chapter. Do you guys remember that? Firstly, it was all Dreadnoughts get to halve incoming damage, and then it got changed to -1 damage. And now all Dreadnoughts just have that as a special rule. Are we going to see a renaissance of the Boxy Boys?
That was Duty Eternal, right?
That is Duty Eternal, yep.
Yeah, there is Honor of the Chapter. We can talk about that later. But Duty Eternal, that's what it is. Yeah, -1 in damage.
They just have that now. That's just a rule Dreadnoughts have.
Yep.
Yeah, get ready for those Forge World indexes.
Man.
Yeah, sure. Surely they can't give that to Levy Dreads, right? Or if they do give to Levy Dreads, they have to go up in everything.
Well, I don't know how much you guys have got to see of it, but I mean, every Dreadnought is also core right now.
Yeah.
So will the Leviathan Dreadnought break the mold?
Wait and see.
I think the relics, they've got a little bit of an excuse to do it with the relics if they, you know, choose to go off the map with that.
Yes.
The relic
there is an opportunity. Yeah. Yes.
Justifiable. So, but I mean, kind of back on the topic though, the orcs though, I, I think that that's, you need an effective distraction and or delivery mechanism for your choppy boys. And
yes, I do. I think because grots are overpriced and you need to take orc boys, I think you're beholden to get some work out of the orc boys. You need to find a way to make them meaningful. I think trucks is the way I'd want to do it.
Trucks,
but I
and
think,
battle
like,
wagons.
Look, yeah, I think I like the mechanized orc concept, but look, the Green Tide isn't dead by any means. I think it's still got play. I think it's still relevant.
Man, I don't know. I think it's hurting hard with the Necron Warrior changes we were just talking about.
Well, yeah, can Necron Warriors just out green, like they can do the microwave tide, the utensil tide?
Well, with the ability to move, like we said, you know, to control the momentum of combat and have all those shots is going to be rough. I mean, you essentially pierce any armor that an orc could muster.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, that's that you talk about those strength 5 weapons, right? I mean, Gauss Reapers, strength 5, assault 2, 12 inches, AP minus 2, 1 damage. Like, you're going to whittle away a lot of stuff with just that profile.
Yeah.
You got to be in something. You got to be in something for hopefully multiple turns. And the only way to do that is, you know, what is it? The Chin Orc, the battle wagons, the trucks.
The Chin Orc is pretty cool. I would love to see someone go Blood Axes Chin Orc, Flight of the Valkyries. Dun, 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 dun. That'd be cool.
So, but
for thinking, as far not as sure the, it's any good.
I think the Green Tide is sounding pretty ambitious right now.
So I called a game 2 weeks ago at a charity event. It wasn't a ridiculously competitive event, but first and second place were both orc players, and both of them were running essentially a version of a Green Tide. Central to round Gaz, they're running Goths and a bit of Death Skulls for some pinching obsec. Now, I was a big fan of that list. At that time, I'm not sure it's going to survive the new iterations we've got here, the new codexes and things like that. But look, I can't tell you it's bad, guys. It's one event. Like, who would have thought orcs were going to win anything in ninth with the points changes? But I just think the mission structure plays into a lot of their playstyles.
I got to say, Adam, I had faith when some of my guys on some of the you know, folks I work with at the play with on the U.S. Army esports team thought that there was something. I had faith in them, and they've won out, Adam. I don't know about you, but I'm no expert on orcs, but they made it work.
And I still think you can. I'm not sure it's going to be ultra powerful. You can't like just slap orcs on the table and be like, we're going to wah and win. None of that. But
you
can,
because you have to have faith in the power of the wog and the profit of the wog. Red, what were your buddies taking, Red?
So I know he had Gazgul. I'd have to pull it up, but I believe he was running Goths, and so he was definitely leaning into it, but. I will have to get that and share that at another time. But yeah, no, he definitely, and it was a challenge. People said that orcs couldn't make it, and he wanted to prove them otherwise, and he did just that.
What a champ.
Yeah, really.
I appreciate people who are willing to do that, because it opens our eyes again and I feel like it refocuses the community for everyone, like champion who's got the cojones to go out and just be like, you know, I might not win, but I'm going to put this on the map. Really opens our eyes and just refocuses from the hyperbole we get stuck in on the internet.
I agree.
I was actually talking about this with a buddy of mine a couple of days ago, and you know, in my gaming club, we've got some serious list builders. And towards the end of the previous edition, it seemed like there was a kind of a gravitation from lots of people to like netlist.
Mm.
And I know it's easier to do that, but there's always a little room to innovate. There's still an Any Given Sunday type. That's a football reference, Adam, and anyone else.
Well, in a game as deep as ours, in a game with as many options and as many moving parts, you're always going to find your own. You're always going to find a niche. You're always going to find a play style that works for you and a way in which you enjoy playing the game. And I think that's one of the strongest things going for 40K. It's diversity. Even when we do have super polarized metas where, you know, some things just will not go the distance, you can find a way to enjoy what you like and what you want to play. And I feel like that's always been a good testament to the game. Admittedly, like, there are some times where that does just feel worse than others. I can think of a few, but Yeah, look, on the whole, I think 9th edition is shaping up to be pretty exciting. And look, the structure of the books we have now, it doesn't feel like, if they keep the structure, if they keep to the same structure for every book as they have for these two, I can see it being a really balanced edition. And I hope they don't diverge too much from the way they're writing the books and structuring things at the moment. Like, everybody's getting this mono bonus. Everybody's getting a huge swathe of defensive buffs, either in extra wounds or limiting the amount of wounds per taken, or the way you wound them and stuff like that. Notice I just said wound three times there. Remember last edition, it was all about the hit roll. Everything was about limiting your opponent's hit roll. -3 to hit, -2 to hit, -5 to hit. Maybe this is the wound edition. Maybe they're like, the hit one's been overdone, boys. Back to the drawing board. We're focusing on the wound roll now.
You could be right. There's a lot of wound manipulation in the Necron Codex.
There is. All of a sudden, there's a bunch of different wound manipulation stuff.
I appreciate that you can't like overstack things. You know what I mean? I do appreciate that there is a back and forth between the limited plus one, minus one kind of deal.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's only good for the game as well.
Well, okay, guys. Thanks for joining me and indulging me talking about orc stuff here in the glorious month of October. And we're going to continue. We're going to have an orc segment every week this month.
Wow. I mean, I'm not sure. I think I've gone my whole shebang on the first round. We'll see. I'll talk to some orc mates and just see what they've got percolating.
See what they're brewing. I mean, that's it. But I'd like to see where their head's at, to see if our finger in the air predictions are anywhere close.
Yes, you're very true. Yeah, like I said, we're talking this from a place of non-expert.
Yeah, I mean, I'm an orc builder. I'll say that. I've been playing as much as I want.
So I would really love to do an orc army. And I even tried to do an orc army a couple of years ago. I bought a bunch of black orcs and a bunch of orc knobs, and I wanted to make Gaz's goth mob. And so I converted and just made supersized. Everyone's a biggin, essentially, or an old ard boy from Yugon eras. And I just burnt myself out, man. I wish
it's a bit of a slog. A full orc army takes commitment, and we're going to reward that by talking about them every week this month.
Beautiful, because I have a wish list for a new orc boy unit, and we'll talk about it next week,
guys. We'll be back real soon.
See you.
Like, share, and subscribe, all that stuff.
Puts baby in the corner.